Jeff Merrick, what has 557 career coaching victories?
Al Arbor.
Oh, no, wait.
And 558 chins. What? What's wrong?
The 15-year-old coach, former Regina Pat defenseman.
Oh, yeah.
Who Kelly Rudy once kicked in the face in junior hockey.
Oosh.
Red Trouts.
He was in the playoffs 7 times in 15 seasons. Alas, this season, in which the Nashville Predators finished 6th, will be his last with the Nashville Predators. Barry Trotz will not have his contract renewed, according to the team, and team sources, we should say. And off he goes to his next destination. And here we go with speculation on what the next phase of Predators hockey should look like.
Well, you see, it's bizarre because when you look around the NHL, it's so hard to completely redo your team in an offseason, specifically this offseason where the free agent market, if you want to go shopping that way, isn't going to redo your team unless you think that Dan Boyle and Kimmo Timonen are going to zap things around. So I don't know how much, because I had the same thought too. Like, what does the Barry Trotz firing signal for David Poile and the Nashville Predators? Well, the strengths of your team are still Pekka Rinne and Shea Weber. And I think there will be some teams that'll take a run at Shea Weber this summer. I could see Edmonton throwing a significant, you know, bundle of players and picks and prospects David Poile's way to try to pry Shea Weber out of Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Philadelphia, you've brought this point up before. Maybe Philadelphia takes a whack at that pinata as well. But really, I mean, if you're going to focus on and keep your two core players, the guys that are still the best players on your team right now, I'm not sure how much, you know, they can change. I'm not sure, you know, how much you can say, hey, Philip Forsberg, the bungee cords aren't on the hockey pants anymore. Hey, ditto for you, Cali Yarncroc as well. Because at the heart of this team are, you know, two-way players. Here's your Mike Fishers, and there's your Matt Collins, and there's your Paul Gostads, you know?
Role play. That's the See, yeah. You're getting into the construction versus coaching argument, and it's a fair one to have. I wonder how much of that is the constraints of management's finance, ownership's finances. I don't know. But you look at this roster, and you say to yourself, okay, they did play a defensive style, but who's putting the puck in the net anyway?
Yeah.
They're all like the same player.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all just a bunch of role players, third line centers, guys who are good for you in the clutch. But no, there are no stars in this
team. It's weird, too, because what was it? A couple of seasons ago, they were the second or third highest, or maybe fourth highest offensive team in the NHL when they went to the playoffs. They had that freak year.
Inexplicably. Yeah. And we can call it a freak year. We'll call it an outlier. That's what all the stats call it, right?
That's an outlier.
But last 2 years, the offense has been dog shit. And it's clear that the Trotz defensive system had kind of run its course with this franchise after 15 years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you bring in somebody who's going to be more of an offensive guy, I don't know where – you don't have the horses for it. That's the real issue with this team right now, is that you can build around Weber and you can build around Pekka Rinne, but if you have a bunch of Paul Gostads as your offensive options up front, then you're screwed anyway.
You see, the Minnesota Wild used to be this under Doug Risebrough, but they had Marian Gaborik. It was a button-down team plus Marian Gaborik. You don't have the plus Marian Gaborik here on the squad.
In theory, it should be like plus Patrick Hornquist, but he's not that kind of player.
He's not that guy.
No.
He's not that guy.
That's the issue with the Predators right now, is like, what is your identity if not to be a defensive team, because you don't have the horses to be an offensive team. Now, I really find it interesting that if Poile stays, and there's probably still a little question as to whether or not he stays, but it sounds like he will, that they've already made the coaching announcement. It'll be interesting to see what direction he goes, because if you talk about guys that are, you know, as much as we joke about Lamoriello with all of the, you know, Providence College ties and all that shit, or, you know, Massachusetts hockey and New England hockey, like, Poile is Team USA. He bleeds it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd assume the next guy to get the gig in Nashville is going to be somebody from the Team USA family.
So which Peter opens Laviolette up some, comes in.
Well, it opens or up Phil a Housley. Lot of interesting Phil possibilities. Housley. Phil Housley being the first and foremost one, obviously, because he's already on staff. He's got familiarity with the players. You know, the maturation of Seth Jones with Phil Housley under the watchful eye of him is a good thing. All of these things would point to Housley being a solid candidate. That said, you're going to have Laviolette on the market, who's obviously got Team USA ties. Ron Wilson on the market, Team USA ties. Potentially John Tortorella on the market. Obvious USA hockey ties.
Mm-hmm.
The question then becomes whether or not you want to go with somebody with a name value like that, or if you want to go with somebody who can grow with the team. I much prefer in that market growing with the team. I don't know. I mean, Peter Laviolette's a great coach. He's going to be able to put together a good team there with whatever pieces he's given. But ultimately, I like the idea of a Phil Housley getting that gig and growing with the team.
Okay, how about then someone who used to be on the bench, not as a head coach, but an assistant coach, who is now a head coach with Milwaukee, the American Hockey League, the affiliate for the Nashville Predators. How about someone like Dean Evason? I know it's only the 1 year as a head coach, but if you want to talk about growing the team, that's an option. Someone who was
there. It was never a bad assistant in Washington either.
No.
Kind of liked Evason.
Yeah. So, Dean Evason, you might want to throw into that mix. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're David Poile right now, there's no rush to do this, right? There is zero rush to name a head coach because, you know, by my count, and let me know if I need to fill in a couple more blanks here on this one, Wish. You have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven more teams that may punt their coach in the next few days. Toronto, Winnipeg, Florida. Peter Horchak's got the relationship back with Nashville as well. So you want to throw that into the mix. The Vancouver Canucks, you've already mentioned. The Ottawa Senators, the Washington Capitals, and the Carolina Hurricanes. And that's where Kirk Muller came from in the first place. There's no hurry. There's no hurry here for David Poile. I mean, we don't have the full landscape yet. We don't have the full, you know, coaching kaleidoscope presented in front of us yet. So there is no hurry. There is just this, you know, speculation who we think should be the would be the best fit in Nashville.
I will back it right now. I will get behind this this movement. Barry Trotz for Capitals coach. It makes too much sense with his ties to the organization, and it makes too much sense for what this team needs structurally. I think he carries some modicum of respect. I think his system would be beneficial to the Capitals that can't play a goddamn lick of good hockey 5-on-5. I think all of these things point to him being in Washington a good thing. Now, I was at Capitals getaway day today. I do not know. I'm going to do a little quick Twitter search here because I don't know if this happened or not. I don't know if Adam Oates met the media today or not. Let me see. Oates.
Because he wasn't supposed to, right?
Yep. He has actually met with the media today. So Oates met with the media. Okay. But GM George McPhee did not.
Sorry.
Oates tells NBC Washington he hasn't received any indication regarding his job status. He has 1 year remaining on his contract. Okay. So he doesn't know what's going on with his job. George McPhee met with Leontis this morning and will meet with Leontis again. We were told at Caps Getaway Day that he would not be speaking to the media. But George, for some reason, decided it was imperative to hold a conversation with defenseman Connor Carrick within complete eye shot of the media. Steps away from
so
where the media steps away from a giant media scrum around Mike Green. And he did so just to be able to kind of say, look, guys, I can't talk to you right now. But in a few days we'll talk. So the prevailing wisdom in Washington is that McPhee met with Leontis. Leontis, infamous for his inability to fire executives, said we're thinking about it, and now George twists him the wind for a few days before seeing if he has his contract renewed or not. You're right. It could be total regime change in Washington. As of today, from what I understand, Oates did not meet with his players, which to me would be an indication that maybe he's out of the picture.
Yeah, I read your piece on Alexander Ovechkin, and I'm with you. He's a right now a hockey player who can't catch a break. He can catch a Rocket Richard trophy. He can catch a plane to Minsk to represent Russia at the World Championships, but right now he can't catch a break. I thought the point that you brought up in your piece is a salient one. When he's playing more defense, people ask, where are the goals? When he's scoring goals, people are asking, where's the defense? And you know that underscores to me specifically about Ovechkin, Wish, more than anything else, and I'm more 100% behind this than ever before. Just take the damn C off and just let him be a hockey player.
Let him play.
Just go and score goals. I am, you know, fiddlers fiddle and dancers dance. Just go and score goals and everything else be damned. Let everybody else worry about the captain's assignments and what you need to do and the bridge between the players and man and all that. Just go be a hockey player. Some guys are cut out to lead, and it's not a bad thing if you're not that guy. The history books are littered with great hockey players who are not great leaders, right?
Yeah.
Let Ovechkin be that guy. There's no reason to have the C on.
And that's I felt a twinge of sympathy for Ovechkin today in talking to him, because he's completely right. When he was playing a defensive style of hockey under Dale Hunter, everyone and their mom was like, oh, it's the death of Ovechkin. He'll never be the same player he was before. His stats are in the toilet. What are they paying this man to do? Block shots? And then, like, under Oates, he wins a Hart. He scores 51 goals. He's doing everything he can do to earn that money. And everybody's like, the man doesn't back check. How on earth
all
can you
sudden,
expect
I
to
know.
Be a successful National Hockey League player if you don't play defense?
All of a sudden, everybody wants him to be Patrice Bergeron or Jonathan Taves.
It's like Ovechkin said. I mean, it's like you either tell me that that the magic is gone and I can't score goals, or I score all the goals and you tell me, well, you're not playing defense now. I kind of felt sympathy for him because, look, it's very easy for us to be like, well, just be competent defensively. Well, he knows only one gear. He only has one gear. It's go, 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 offense, offense, offense. And here's the great part for the Capitals. When he's going, he scores 51 goals.
I know.
And it's,
I know.
You know what? I feel for – it's like, what do I got to do? When Ovechkin does, you know, throw his teammates under the bus and say, look, it ain't just my problem, it's everybody's problem – I know a lot of people are like, oh, you're the captain. You should be taking more blame onto yourself. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, he's completely right. He scored 51 goals. I mean, yeah. we can look up and down the lineup at the other guys that have minuses. We look up and down the line at the guys who didn't score 51 goals and say, where were you?
You know what? You know who used to be like this and who was like this, who never met his own netminder in his entire career? Phil Esposito. The old joke used to be for Phil to get back into his own zone, they would have to bring a crane and pick him up and place him back in his own zone.
That's
how he backchecked, with a crane.
That's not true. I played defense throughout my entire career. They said, Espo, back check. And they'd look behind me and say, yep, it's still there.
I never heard that one before. That's good. Yep, still there.
On the spot. Look at those amazing improv skills.
No, I know. You're Robin Williams. You're remarkable.
Oh.
But I mean, like honestly, like again, history is you know punctuated with players that just go and play and they're one way guys. Last time I checked, Pavel Bure was a pretty good hockey player. Last time I checked, Pavel Bure is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Last time I checked, Pavel Bure didn't back check.
It's a great comparison.
You know, just go and score goals. Just go be a hockey player. Nothing wrong. You don't have to be Sidney Crosby. You don't have to have the C. You don't have to have the expectation of being that 200-foot, blah, 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 all that kind. No, you don't. Just go score goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just, you know what? Some guys want to play rhythm guitar. Some guys want to solo. Let Ovechkin solo.
And I know
just let him go solo.
I know there could be a lot of people that are listening, like, well, that's not fair. I mean, like, we criticize other players for not being well-rounded or being one-dimensional, but Ovechkin gets a pass. Well,
yes, because he scores 50 goals every year.
Exactly right. He is the exception to the rule. He gets a pass because he scores 51 goals.
Sorry, you score that many goals, get a little bit of slack.
Yeah,
you blew the zone early a little bit a couple of times.
Yeah,
ooh,
exactly.
Kill me.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, sorry. You know, like who'd be a good... Nikolai Zhirdev doesn't get a pass.
Nope.
Okay, he doesn't get a pass because he scores like 15.
Mm-hmm.
Ovechkin gets a pass because he scores 51.
Yep.
Bottom line for me with Nashville, I would like to see someone to grow with the team. You agree?
Yes, I do, because I still think that when you look at this Preds team, I don't think that when this team, you know, reaches the next rung on the ladder of credibility and competence, I'm not so sure that their rock on the blue line will still be there. I think when this team sort of transitions into Seth Jones being the main guy back there, it's going to be a different looking team. There's nothing wrong with having a coach grow up with that squad. I'm not sure whether he'd be that coach when they, you know, go past the second round in the playoffs, but I like the idea of someone growing with the Nashville Predators. Absolutely.
But you sound like you think either this will happen or should happen, the trade of Shea Weber. Is it more like you think it's imperative for this organization to use him to fill the roster with better players?
Yeah.
Or do you think that you'd like to keep him, but you think it's inevitable he might be traded?
I think when you look at what they have right now on the back end, and I know they've already let go of Ryan Suter, but when you look at what they have on the back end, when you look at the future of it, it is going to all focus around Seth Jones. and whatever they pick up in the draft this year, whomever they pick up in the draft this year, if they and do indeed go the defenseman route. I just look at this team, not as saying, oh, they missed their window. You know, it's a popular thing to say. But I'm just not sure that you can't really move this team forward without making a move on Shea Weber. Like, see, you can really change the dynamic of, and I understand a lot of the offense comes from the back end. And Shea Weber is one of the premium guys, and it's always tough when you move someone of Shea Weber's stature and of the the promise and credibility of someone like Shea Weber and the performance of him. But you want to put this thing, you want to hit fast forward on the tape deck here. You make a move with Shea Weber and you grab a lot of assets from the Edmonton Oilers.
Fast forward on the tape deck.
That's, you know, I don't want to hear the song anymore.
on your Walkman, Jeff Merritt.
Yeah, I know.
With the little thin headphones, the big orange poofies on the side. That one.
I have an iPod.
I hold on to Shea Weber because it's the Dion Phaneuf conundrum, but on a much larger scale. When the Leafs were debating whether or not to sign Phaneuf, my take on it was this. If you get rid of him, if you cut ties with him, you're going to spend the next 3 to 4 years trying to get that guy again.
You have Seth Jones.
And in Weber's case.
You have Seth Jones.
But he's not, he'll never be Shea Weber. Weber is one of the five best defensemen on Earth, on the planet, of any continent. I don't think he's the problem. I understand that you can flip him and make your team a lot better, but but I think you end up making a problem for yourself that you don't need to have if you have Shea Weber under contract until the sun explodes. Like, I think you're okay on that one. You don't need to make that problem for yourself. It's a good problem to have, and I think you try to find ways to build around him versus jettisoning him for Eberle and what do you get back? Eberle, Schultz, and 2 ones or something? I don't know what you
How
get.
How about Eberle Gagne in the Oilers' first pick this year?
Not enough?
Might be a second overall pick, but maybe be a first.
It's tempting. But I still think that you keep Weber at the end of the day.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with keeping Shea Weber. Trust me, I'm not trying to run this guy out of town. Like, there's been no bigger backer of Shea Weber than myself, who I still think, you know, when we look back at his career, we're going to say, yeah, he hit like Scott Stevens and shot like Al MacInnis. Give me that defenseman any day of the week, for sure. But I'm just saying, if you want to move this thing along, that's one of the ways you can do it.
But I will listen. I'm torn because I think he's perfect in Nashville, but I do want to play matchmaker and get him in Edmonton.
It is kind of perfect there too.
You know what? Because I want Edmonton to succeed. It sucks when you have all of these amazing young players there and then they don't get to be in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Hey, listen, I'm with you. I know it's frustrating. I do plenty of those games for Sportsnet. I understand the frustration. You know, I look at the coaching staff. I mean, which coaching staff do you think leads the NHL in eyeball rolls?
That's a good question. Which one?
I'm probably saying Edmonton. Like, which coaching staff rolls their eyes more than the Edmonton Oilers?
By the way, the question of the day.
We just decided.
We don't have one. It was to be announced. Okay. Which coaching staff in the National Hockey League rolls their eyes the most at the play of their players?
Yeah.
PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com, @Wyshynski, @JeffMerrick on Twitter, #NBSW. Give us the coaching staff you believe rolls their eyes more at the play of their players than anybody else.
Yeah.
Rob Huck, Trotz wasn't fired. His contract was up and not renewed. Not a vote of confidence.
True.
Both sides kept their arrangement. Bullshit.
I know. I'm going to do this, like, peek behind the curtain here. We got to get Bernie Federico on the line. So you know what you have to do? You have to start the show.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I want to see and hear the timeline to all this.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
The man is a sheriff of the tradition of Cleavon Little, of all of the great sheriffs throughout history.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
He rode a blazing saddle. My
Cleavon Little reference gets a blazing saddle intro from Mark Cole.
Mark Cole. It's our boy.
I love that. I should also put over Mark Cole's Mid-South Wrestling zine that he has called Russian Flag Burial that he sent us. Had a really good article on the evolution of Dustin Rhodes on there that I liked a lot.
I don't think I got one of those. I want to read that. Mark, send that to me, bud. I want to read that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he sent it to you, but you put it on your pile of to be autographed versus on your pile of to read. Mr. TV.
I'll get around to that. Oh, I've worn out 3 Sharpies today already.
By the way, you get the contract wasn't renewed thing, I don't see that as anything but a firing. It goes one of two ways. Contract not renewed / fired or decided to leave for another team's employment. If DeBoer had left the Devils, it would have been because the Leafs wanted him and he decided to leave. If DeBoer had just been jettisoned, his contract, quote, was not renewed. By the way, Lou said he has another year. Lou said he's under contract for next season.
Was that a team option they just picked up?
I don't know if it's a team option or if he signed an extension or what, but for all the people that did the math and said, well, his contract's up, once again, in true Devils fashion, signed him to a new contract decided not to tell anybody.
All right, our guest is standing by. Let's get to him. He's a very important person. He's a Hall of Famer, Greg Wyshynski.
Damn right, he's a Hall of Famer. Joining us down the line, Bernie Federico, who's going to tell us, he's going to try to give us a glimmer of hope that the St. Louis Blues tumble, fall from grace late in this season does not mean they will be a pushover at the hands of Chicago Blackhawks in round one. Bernie, welcome back to the podcast. How are you, sir?
Thanks, guys. You know what? I hope that what is happening is just minor, guys. That's all I can say is that I think this team is still pretty confident that they're going to be okay. I think this is going to be a really good series against the Hawks.
Well, here's why I think St. Louis should probably be okay. I was at the game at the United Center 2 weeks ago, the NBC game on the Sunday, Bernie. And even though the Hawks ended up winning that one, I came away from the game thinking to myself, there's probably no team in the NHL that plays a better structured game than the St. Louis Blues. That travels in the playoffs, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know what? The Blues, I mean, when you look at the record against the Hawks this year, the Blues won 3 and the Hawks won 2, although, you know, 2 of the Blues victories were in a shootout, which we're not going to have, you know, when the playoff time comes around. But, yeah, I mean, they're a very structured team. Right now, the Blues are going through some tough times because of some key injuries, too. I mean, they actually had 7 regulars out of the lineup for the game yesterday against Detroit. And, we know that some of them are going to back. We probably are going to expect probably 5 or 6 of them to come back, you know, for the playoffs right off the bat. So, you know, whether or not they're going to be 100% coming back or not, that's going to be the big question. But, you know, this is a team that plays as you said, a very structured game. They play a defense first style, you know, under Ken Hitchcock. And, you know, I think this is, as I said, going to be a great series because, I mean, this is a great matchup for the Blues and the Hawks.
Of the players that are out, Bernie, which ones do we expect might miss time during the first round, if not the entire first round?
Well, you know what? I think that just kind of looking at the way the injury happened in Dallas to Patrick Berglund, he's the one that I would have the biggest question mark. You know, he was in a great deal of pain when he left the ice. And the other guy that would be Tarasenko, whether or not he's going to be back towards the middle of the playoffs, that they're hoping that, you know, he's had the hand problem and he's been skating with the team and this and that. He just, you know, still has a cast on and he's not playing as of yet, but hopefully by the maybe 3rd or 4th game that he can be back. So the rest of the guys, it's still going to be question marks. They did not practice today. They had a day off, so we'll probably know a little more watching practice tomorrow. But right now I do expect that, you know, probably 5 or 6 of the guys will be back, but I don't expect Berglund to be back right off the bat.
Bernie, your thoughts on Ryan Miller? Came in like a house on fire, was fantastic for the St. Louis Blues. Softened a little bit, as you all know, as the team got plagued with injuries. Your thoughts on Ryan Miller?
Ryan Miller is still, you know what, a great goaltender. I mean, he's very poised. He's always in good position. I mean, he played very well yesterday. In fact, I think the Blues gave up 4 breakaways to Detroit yesterday, and he stopped all 4 of them. But, you know, right now, you know, he has said that he's not playing the way he wants to be playing. He feels that he needs to be sharper. And, you know, to his defense, I mean, it's tough. You know, you get traded after all those years in Buffalo. and all the pressure's on you, this and that. The Blues are expected to be one of those teams that is supposed to be a contender for the playoffs. So there's a lot of extra pressure on him. So I think maybe he's putting too much pressure on himself and just instead of just playing, going out there and play. And then, you know what, you have to look at the injuries too. The Blues have had a lot of injuries, which they've had, you know, a lot of makeshift lines. They've had a lot of different defensive pairings for him too. So, I mean, the Blues have not played their best hockey, so you can't certainly fault Ryan Miller. I mean, he's the last line of defense, but the team has not played that well in front of him. And you know, I think that they really still believe strongly in him. He believes in himself. So I expect that you know, when it comes Thursday, it's going to be a different story. And you know, I think that Ryan Miller is you know, a great acquisition, and hopefully he's going to make the difference.
Interesting. If Backes and Oshie are both back, do you expect them to play the big Steen Backes Oshie line in the playoffs, or do you think they might wind up putting Backes on another line and try to spread the wealth a little bit?
That's a good question. I know that Ken Hitchcock, you know, experimented an awful lot, you know, with the guys in and out of the lineup, and even when the guys were all healthy, he did a lot of experimenting. So he's got a playbook. I think that he will not be afraid to go to if he has to make changes. But to be honest with you, you know, Backes has had a great battle over the years with Jonathan Toews. I mean, they play hard against each other, whether it's Team Canada versus Team U.S. or, you know, Hawks and Blackhawks or in Blues. So, you know, and I expect to, right off the bat that, you know, hopefully that Oshie is going to be okay and Backes is going to be okay, that I expect that Steen will be on that line. And I think that line will start the playoffs together. That's my gut feeling. And that line, whether or not they've been checked or they're the checking line, they've been, you know, awful dynamic all year long. And I would be very surprised if they weren't together, you know, for game one.
Backes gets headlines, certainly. TJ Oshie, Jay Bouwmeester, Alex Pietrangelo, Kevin Shattenkirk, Ryan Miller. What about a player like Vladimir Sobotka, who, you know, even we all know, you know, how fantastic he is taking draws. He is one of, if not the best, in the NHL. But in your mind, Bernie, what else does Vladimir Sobotka bring to the Blues?
Well, he's so versatile. I mean, Sobey can play so many different positions. I mean, he's great, as you said, on the faceoffs. I mean, he is one of those guys that is, you know, is a bull in a china shop. I mean, he plays, you know, like a big man. I mean, here's a guy that's 5'10" at the most, and he plays like he's 6'5". Very strong on the puck, and you know, when you look at the center iceman on the Blues, I mean, I think you look at Sobotka maybe being the best playmaking center iceman that the Blues do have. I mean, he sees the ice very well, dishes it up very well. He can kill penalties. So, you know, when you look at a guy that's maybe one of the unsung heroes on this hockey club, I think you have to always look at Vladdy Sobotka, because he's, you know, he's been able to do so many different things. And I think that he could be very much a key in this playoff series as well, because, you know, if you get him on the line, whether it be Schwartz, where Tarasenko does come back, and those three played so well together when they were, you know, matched earlier in the season. So, you know, that you know, line, you're going to need to have another second or third line scoring on this hockey club if you're going to beat the Hawks. And certainly I think Sobotka is going to play a big role in you know, whether or not the Blues are going to win the series or not.
How much is agitation going to play a role? I mean, we know what Backes can do. But, I mean, having Max LaPierre on the roster, having Steve out on the roster, all of these things seem to point to a Blues team that could really kind of be a nudge to the Blackhawks in this first round. Do you expect them to play that way?
You know, to be honest, I don't. I mean, I really believe that the Blues and the Blackhawks know each other so well that I don't think that you're going to be able to BS anybody. I mean, I think no one's really going to be able to bluff their way through a series like this. Everybody knows the tendencies. Everybody knows from playing against each other for so many games that they know exactly what each player is made of. So I expect this to be, you know, a real meat and potatoes, you know, hockey series. I mean, it's going to be hard-nosed. It's going to be very intense, and I think when you get the crowds involved, I mean, there's going to be a lot of, you know, people from Chicago are going to be coming down here for the games. There's going to be a lot of Blues fans going up to Chicago as well. So this is a rivalry that has gone on for an awful lot of years, and I expect this to be, you know, a great, great series. But I don't think that there's going to be a lot of bluffing going on out there. I mean, everybody's going to just, I think, to be honest with you, everybody's just going to play, you know, real hard-nailed hockey, and, you know, it's going to be whether, you know, come down to who wants it more is going to probably win the series. And maybe it could come down to goaltending, and hopefully that's one of the reasons that the Blues got Ryan Miller, and they're hoping that maybe could be the difference in this series.
Hey, Bernie, last one for me, and we thank you for your time. One thing that St. Louis has been consistent with going back to expansion in 1967 is they've always tried to keep one or two sluggers in the lineup, whether it's the Plagers or Noel Picard or Gassoff or Twist or Chase. Now the team has Ryan Reeves, who is a frightening young man who can really strike fear into the hearts of the other team. Your thoughts on Ryan Reeves and what he brings? Not so much, we'll see what happens in the playoffs, but during the regular season.
Well, you have to have a presence. I mean, I'm old school guy, and to me, you always have to have a presence in the lineup. You know, again, I mean, the game has changed an awful lot, but, you know, as far as enforcers go, but I think that when there is a guy like Ryan Reeves in the lineup that, you know what, I think the skilled players understand that that if something gets out of hand, you know, that he's going to come to the rescue. So, you know, Ryan Reeves has not only done a great job, you know, as a enforcer, as the guy, the tough guy that you need to have on the roster, but he's really improved his game. I mean, he's a very good skater. He's learned the game an awful lot. You know, under Ken Hitchcock, he's you know, learned a lot of things about, you know, positioning, about reading the type of game that's going on, and not taking penalties when you shouldn't be taking penalties. So you know, he's played in a lot of different situations, even late in the game now. So I think that's a very, very important, you know, to have that type of player in the lineup. And I think Chicago's got the same thing with Brandon Bolick. I mean, he's kind of done the same role for the Hawks and continues to get more and more ice time. So the fact that both Bolick and Reeves are going to be, you know, dressed in the series. I mean, they did fight, you know, last week in the game in Chicago. So I expect, as I said, there's going to be no bluffing, but to have both of them in the lineup, I think that just shows the skilled players that, hey, if anything gets out of hand, we're there to make sure that everything evens up. So their roles are there, and I think that they're going to play vital roles in this first round series.
And finally, Bernie, your thoughts on the decision not to bring back Barry Trotz with the Nashville Predators, a longtime division rival?
Well, you know what? You know, he's done a marvelous job. I mean, Barry Trotz has taken, an organization there in Nashville and made them, a very successful, hardworking team that everybody in the league has utmost respect for the way the Nashville Predators have played. And whether or not they had enough talent some of the years, they seemed to always compete. And I think the Ken Hitchcock said it best, is that there's no one that competes harder and plays harder. You're not going to ever, you know, outcompete the Nashville Predators. And I think that has a lot to do with Barry Trotz. So, you know, unfortunately, though, you know, in professional sports, when things change, when you're not as successful, when your fans have a goal in mind, and obviously that's to get to the Stanley Cup or to be successful in making the playoffs. I mean, sometimes you have to make a change in direction from the ownership. And, certainly, when you look at this, it's not because of what Barry Trotz, you know, did as a coach that he's being replaced. I think it's just the organization is just looking to make a change and go in a different direction. But certainly, I think that Trotz should be, you know, congratulated for all the great times and the great efforts that he's had those guys do. And he's going to get another job because he's a hell of a coach. And, he will continue to be a good coach in the National Hockey League.
Sounds good, Bernie. All right, the great Bernie Federico, ladies and gentlemen,
yes,
who will be a voice you'll want to hear during these playoffs, telling you why the Blues have thrived or have crashed and burned in the first round. Thank you, Bernie.
Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you, guys. You're quite welcome. It should be a heck of a series, and we're hoping that the Blues come out on top.
Yeah,
you guys have a great day.
Thanks, Bernie. Much appreciated. It is interesting the way, you know, you look at the Chicago-St. Louis series, look at San Jose and Los Angeles. Two teams you could make a Stanley Cup case for will be gone in the first round, Wish. Will be Dunsky.
For sure. And, you know, I have to start making these picks for, like, the final, which you and I guess, will make on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
My preseason Stanley Cup final was the Sharks and the Bruins. I'll stick with it, even though my confidence in the Sharks pick is at an all-time low. The one thing that I like going into that series from a San Jose perspective is home ice. You know, the fact that both teams held serve last postseason, or last time they played in the postseason, makes me optimistic that San Jose can win the series with a Game 7 on home ice, but that's the last team you want to play. I like San Jose's offensive depth enough where I don't think they're going to be neutered if Doughty takes out the Thornton line. But boy, that's a tough matchup in the first round, especially when all of a sudden your confidence in the Emmy is a little bit shaken.
Yeah, maybe. I think I still like San Jose in that series, though.
Yeah?
I still do. I mean,
what about the Chicago series?
I like Chicago in that series.
Yeah, me too.
Chicago was my Stanley Cup pick at the beginning of the year, and I'm sticking with it. I had Chicago and Detroit at the beginning of the year.
There is something to be said about the last week or so before the playoffs not meaning much, but it means something when the two things you need to go right in the postseason are going terribly wrong. When your goaltender looks like a sieve and when your offense is dried up to the point of atrophy. And that's what happened to St. Louis at the end of this regular season. Maybe they turn it around when everybody comes back healthy, but I don't know. It's the offensive struggles for this team predate the injuries.
You know,
makes me a little bit nervous.
I mentioned Ryan Reeves a couple of seconds ago for the St. Louis Blues. Did I ever tell you the story about Willard Reeves, his dad?
No, go ahead.
It's a great one. Willard Reeves was an outstanding running back for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers of the CFL. He played a couple of games, I want to say, with the Redskins as well. And the Miami Dolphins. I can't believe I know that about football, but it's only because I know Willard Reeves a little bit.
American football.
American football at that, I know. So Willard Reeves, great guy. So he would always show up, you know, for practice for game day, full suit, looking good, like looking like a businessman, and always carried a briefcase with him. Like he'd like, okay, this is my business, my profession, I'm coming to work. You know what he kept in the briefcase?
What's up?
Comic books. Isn't that awesome?
Wow.
It's Ryan Reeves' dad.
Wow.
So he's got good, like, athletic bloodlines. And you can tell, dude is just jacked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, he's scary.
Good player.
Yeah?
Oh, well, not really a good player.
Tough
player.
Role player. Character player. He's not a lead actor. He's a character player.
Josh Cooper, the Tennessean, is going to join us in about 8 minutes to talk more about the Barry Trotz situation. And in his firing as his non-renewal as coach. Brendan Shanahan meets the media today, his big coming out party as president of the Maple Leafs. What's your takeaway, if anything, from Shanahan, the Shanahan tour this morning?
First of all, that the title of president is a little interesting. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think for a second he's going to work outside of, you know, showing up at a meeting. Hey, look, Brendan Shanahan's here. Let's close the deal. I don't think he's going to show up at a marketing or sales meeting. I think that's Tim Leiwicki. Thank you very much.
You don't think he's closing the sponsorship deal?
I don't know. Hey, look, the guys from Scotiabank are here. We're going to close this like multi-mega $100 million deal. Hey, look, Brendan Shanahan's taking us out for dinner. Let's close this sucker. Go ahead, drink some Shanny.
Mr. Shanahan, the luxury boxes don't seem to be selling all that well on the high end. Is there anything we can do to adjust them?
How many chicken fingers do we give them when we give them chicken fingers?
I believe it's about a dozen, sir.
Up to 15.
What if instead of plum sauce, we also gave them barbecue and honey mustard? Is that in the budget?
We already giving them barbecue and honey mustard, sir. But not plum sauce.
Well, you know, you guys have the NBAs. I'm just the president of the entire team.
I'm out of ideas. I'm going to go work on, think about this power play on this team. I come back to the point that you and I were going back and forth on the podcast last week and then went back and forth on Twitter on the weekend. I just don't know why it had to be done now, and I'm still a little uncomfortable with the conflict of interest, considering that the negotiations went back a week.
If you did, I was going to say, if you haven't heard, the talk this morning was that the negotiations had really gone on for about a week. And then everything was sort of wrapped up in the last couple of days. So not necessarily a situation where it was going on for months, but obviously there were overtures made many moons ago, being that Leiwicki, all the way back to last summer, was telling Dave Nonis he'd have a president above him. So, I don't have as much of a problem with the conflict of interest as you do. I think knowing the way that department works, knowing the way the NHL works, there's a very good chance he maybe stepped away from duties in the last week. Rather than still being on the stick while negotiating for a new job. But yet again, you know.
It is a window dressing move right now to change the narrative in Toronto. And it's a big Tim Leiwicki move because it's a big name. Brendan Shanahan is, you know, carries a lot of currency around the NHL. But listen, I live here, okay? Like the nature of the conversation today is not about, you know, the horrible collapse at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. It is about what is Brendan Shanahan going to do about it. There will be no dwelling on this right now. It's all about what is Shanahan going to do and who's going to pay for it and how are they going to pay for it and when are they going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the hand-wringing and the anxiety that Toronto went through last year with the Boston Bruins collapse isn't happening right now because right. the story has been tweaked and the story has been changed because Tim Leiweke brought in Brendan Shanahan.
So you think they're being coy about the front office, or do you think that that Nonis and Loisel and all those guys stay?
It wouldn't surprise me if Nonis and Loisel stay. It wouldn't also surprise me if Dave Poulin ends up the next general manager of the Calgary Flames.
You know what's interesting about that, too? I think the McPhee thing could really play into decisions for both Vancouver and Calgary if he's available.
I could see more so Calgary than Vancouver for the Brian Burke reason. I mean, these were all, you know, some of the guys that, you know, all the sort of collage of Pat Quinn people that Pat brought in, whether it's George McPhee or Steve Tambellini.
So does that mean you think, what's Burke. Your thought on Vancouver GM? Do you have one?
I have a thought on Vancouver coach. More than I do of GM.
Who's Vancouver coach?
I think all things, and I don't think that Edmonton's going to make a move behind the bench, but knowing how close the Linden and Aikens family is, Aikens family are, I could see Dallas Aikens going in there if that's Trevor Linden's decision. Those two are tight, man. Dallas Aikens and Trevor Linden are tight. I don't know how many people know that.
Aikens?
Yes, they are so great. I mean, they cycle together in the offseason. The families are always together. That is Trevor and Dallas Aikens are always, you know, texting. I remember when Dallas ran the Marlies operation, we would talk when I go down to do Marlies games, it'd be a lot about Trevor Linden and the races, the cycling races he was doing and the marathons and tries and all that. You know, honestly, these two are tight.
So literally you're saying that Aikens and Linden can bring cycling back to the Canucks.
No, they have the Sedins for that right now. Different kind of cycling. That's a good joke. I'm not sure which general manager goes
Aikens in. Aikens goes to the Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
Trotz goes to Edmonton. Tortorella goes to Nashville. It's the circle
that,
of life.
Just that simple.
It's the circle of life.
What do you think about Vancouver GM?
Boy, I don't know. I every time I see a GM opening, we all come back to the same two names, which is Paul Fenton and Jason Botterill, who seem like they've been mentioned in perpetuity. Forever for these gigs. But also Julien Brisebois would be another. Those three guys, one of them's got to get a job at some point, right?
It's like yeah.
They've been waiting in the wings for what seems like a decade for a job to open up.
I think if Quebec ever gets a franchise, I think you can put Julien Brisebois' name in there, lickety-split.
Well, that's not true.
My Patrick?
Of course. Patrick will have had a success in Denver.
You go back to the team that he grew up idolizing.
I could go back to be a conquering hero in Quebec.
Team he grew up loving.
They make me president of team. They make me general manager. They make me head coach. They make me mayor of the town. They make me starting goalie.
They named the team the province.
They named the team the Quebec Nordoise, which
bad.
Is nice. Nice tribute to me.
Thoughtful.
But that's what they do. All of these things. They don't do that in Denver for me. They don't do that, but they do that in Quebec.
Don't have that kind of respect for me. They need that respect.
They don't have respect. It was how you say power struggle with Joe Sakic. So I decided to go to a place where they appreciate Patrick more. I actually left during a game, which seems to be my modus operandi.
Hey, back to you know what? Patrick actually brings up a really good point. Patrick Roy is already working for the Nordiques. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Well done. Well done.
Okay. The hit yesterday, Paul Byron on Daniel Sedin. Now, Daniel Sedin is fine. He was at the press conference today. He said mainly he was taken off because he was scared. He wasn't sure what was wrong, if anything. Was sort of wiggling his fingers to make sure he was fine. How did you see, knowing that, listen, Paul Byron's like, what, 5'8"? And doesn't exactly have a rep for being, you know, a killer or running around out there. How did you see that hit yesterday?
I don't know.
A little bit, I mean, A little bit of a turn into it on the boards.
It's a little bit of a turn into it, but it's also not a hit you want to see.
Well, commit to the hit, and then the player turns in. I don't know. It old, and such leaning an old over. I know it's a little bit old school. What are you going to do? Such oh, we have Josh Danny. We have Josh Danny.
Joining us now on the line is a man who, like me, shares an affinity for the classic piece of American cinema, The Room. He's had a busy day, and according to producer Dylan, he had food poisoning last night. He is Josh Cooper.
Wow.
And he joins us now on the line. Josh, how's your... By the way, Joshy, I have a hurt belly, too. So we both have hurt bellies right now. How's yours?
It's been an interesting couple days, but nothing like breaking news to snap you out of that funk.
Yeah,
For people that don't know Josh, Josh weighs probably about 75 pounds as it is. So I'm a little bit worried about you wasting away to nothing if you have food poisoning.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's been kind of a struggle. The appetite's slowly coming back, though.
That's good to hear.
Your thoughts on the events in Nashville this morning? I don't want to say that because I don't know many people that were caught by surprise. We kind of all expected this to happen, but your thoughts on Barry Trotz, now ex of the Nashville Predators, behind the bench?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's an interesting, tough day, if you will, in Nashville. I mean, Barry Trotz is a guy who's a day one employee, been here for a long time, guy who kind of had nine lives, if you will, was able to survive a lot of different situations that happened here, and, you know, obviously couldn't survive missing the playoffs two straight years. And just overall, in general, I'm sure it was a tough call that General Manager David Poile had to make. You know, I think he's only the third time he's fired a coach in his entire existence as a general manager in the NHL, or maybe it's the fourth time. But overall, it's just a very very weird day, and it'll be a very weird day opening night next year without seeing Barry Trotz behind the bench.
Do you think this firing is an indication that ownership, management, whomever, want to see a different style of hockey played in Nashville?
I think that's part of it. I mean, you know, we know Barry, and obviously he's known as the coach that gets a lot out of a little, and he's sort of always been that guy, but he's also been a guy that's been known as the coach who champions defense far more over scoring. And I think that when you have a team in Nashville and sort of how they play, you know, it doesn't really lend very well to ticket sales, doesn't really quite lend very well to just the overall excitement of the fan base. And honestly, what gets the fan base excited? Change gets the fan base excited. So if you would sort of come back with all the same characters next year, I think that you would have had a fan base that may have been a little bit upset and any some sort of issues with, you know, kind of selling tickets, which in a market like this is really important. So just in general, I think that a change was sort of needed to be made in order to kind of, well, I don't want to say ignite the fan base, but at least make them a little more excited about the future and the direction of the team.
You know, when it comes to coaching changes at the end of the season, sometimes it's a situation where you jump before you have somewhere to land. And that makes sense because we don't know the full landscape of who's going to get fired at the end of this round of firings. But Housley, Laviolette, Kirk Muller may be out there as well. Dean Evason in Milwaukee are some of the names that have been put forward on this podcast and other properties as well. Decisions to be made on other teams, Washington, Ottawa, Vancouver, Florida with Horacek, and he's got a relationship with the Preds. If you're going to marry Toronto with Randy Carlyle, if you're going to marry a coach out there to the Preds for next season, no Barry Trotz, but this guy instead, who is it?
I really think Laviolette makes a lot of sense just because, and mostly based on speculation, just sort of adding up the numbers. But you know, he's the guy that if you're the Predators, you bring him in here. He's a guy, granted, he has gotten fired twice, but he's also, I mean, I guess who in the NHL hasn't at this point. He's a guy that's won a Stanley Cup, gone to a Stanley Cup final, has coached in a non-traditional market being Carolina. And just in general, you know, just to kind of fit the mold that they're looking for, more offensive, more up-tempo, has a relationship with David Poile. So just overall, I think he's a guy that when I see him, he would make the most sense. But you know, as you said, I mean, it's just simply a case of who gets fired, who's available, who's not available. Is there some sort of you know, candidate out there, a dark horse guy who's an assistant coach that we don't know about? I don't know. And also the NHL is always just a kind of about relationships and who you know. You hardly see a coach come in sight unseen without a GM or assistant GM knowing the person. And taking the job. So there's always, you know, there's going to be a connection in David Poile or Paul Fenton there. And, you know, I think that's sort of what we have to look at.
Merrick and I, before we're at the top of the podcast, we're mulling over the Shea Weber conundrum. I'm a don't trade him, build the team around him. You just make yourself a bigger problem not having him here guy. Merrick thinks there's some benefit to trading him for the right package of players, say from the Edmonton Oilers, if it included, say, Jordan Eberle in the second overall pick. Where are you on the Weber thing, and how feasible is it, based on what you know from the organization, that they actually might move him?
I don't think they're going to move him. And that's just sort of my take on the whole thing is, you know, I just think that it's all about selling tickets here. And if you trade Shea Weber, then that's a major hit to your season ticket base. When you walk around the building, there are a lot of Shea Weber jerseys around there. And, you know, this is a non-traditional market. It's not a huge market by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that that'd be a major blow to that type of situation. In terms of the feasibility of it, I actually think that there's some credence to it. And I think that if you're a team that is sort of in a rebuilding mode, and you look at this team, they do have a very weird mix of veterans and very young players. I'm not just talking about young, experienced players. I'm talking about just very young players who are inexperienced. You know, I feel like you're sort of in a rebuild type situation right now where you can remake your team, build around Seth Jones, build around the young forwards that you're going to get, Roman Josi on defense as well, Ryan Ellis on defense, and kind of move forward from there. You know, I really feel like you're at a point in your franchise where you can do that. And the biggest chip you have is Shea Weber because, again, he does not have a no-trade clause. And he's very movable because of that and doesn't have a lot of leverage either.
Josh, last one for me, and we thank you for your time. Curious about Calle Järnkrok, not just because I love the name, which translates into Iron Hook, but how close does the franchise think this guy is to being a legit NHLer?
I think they think he's pretty close. I mean, will he turn into the Henrik Zetterberg comparison that Ken Holland apparently made? I don't think so. But at the same token, I do believe that Järnkrok is a guy who does have some potential, maybe a second-line center in this league. One thing I noticed, and this is just kind of obviously kind of a hockey, you know, big hockey fan if you watch a lot of hockey type things, he angles the puck really well when he's defending. He knows how to rub guys off the puck. And that's just sort of an innate skill that I think a lot of players don't have. And that's just something that a lot of really good two-way centers are able to kind of do. And, you know, I like his game a lot personally from what I've seen about him. The only issue I see is that he's a little small. Mm-hmm. But besides that, you know, I really like him as kind of a two-way, kind of smaller version of maybe Henrik Zetterberg or Mike Fisher type player as a second-line center.
And last one for me, sir. Michael Delzato, we got a lot of people that are Rangers fans in the listening audience, and I think they'd be interested to find out, what do you do with Michael Delzato, who is an RFA this summer?
That's a really good question. I think you pretty much have to re-sign him, only because they made a lot of sort of fanfare when they traded Kevin Klein to get him. I think you almost have no choice but to re-sign Michael Delzato. He still has potential. The only problem is I'm not sure what his cap hit is, but I think it would merit a higher contract from him, even though he obviously didn't have that great a season this year. But, you know, it's quite a conundrum with that guy. He's a confusing player just because some nights you look at him and you think he's the second coming of Brian Leetch. Other nights you look at him and you just wonder, who is this guy? So just overall, I think they have to just stay safe, but it'll probably cost him a pretty penny just because I think a lot of teams around the league still look at him and see the potential and still really like what he can bring.
Indeed, indeed. All right, Josh. Feel better, sir.
Thanks, Josh.
And enjoy covering the demolition wrecking ball that will be hitting this team this summer.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh.
The great Josh Cooper, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
MDZ is a bit of a conundrum, isn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought that he would have really, like, really thrived under a really tight defensive system like Barry Trotz had. And I'm with Josh. I think they have to re-sign him. I think ultimately it's a, I mean, it's weird because, and I know Michael a little bit too because we work out at the same gym. I know he really liked New York, like really liked New York. Lived there with his brother. They had a place right in downtown Manhattan. He loved being in the big city. Having said that, he's a guy that really craves structure in his game. and he really does. And that's why I thought the Barry Trotz marriage was going to be a really good one for him. I mean, I like him. As much as he may have his detractors defensively, and I understand that. And we talked about Alexander Ovechkin earlier on. I think as far as someone who can, you know, help your power play significantly, I think Del Zotto's that guy. And I also think someone that can both skate and pass the puck out of his own zone effectively and get it out quick. I think MDZ is your own guy. If you're looking for a crusher, if you're looking for someone to step up over the blue line or pitchfork guys in front of the net, MDZ, sorry, it's Canada, wish. MDZ is not your guy.
He will have a long and prosperous career as the next Oleg Teberdovsky.
Or Marc-Andre Bergeron.
Right, exactly. Eric Baer writes in, it was, as far as the question of the day was, which coaching staff had the most eye-rolling? Which one is the one that eye-rolls the most at the way their players play? Eric Baer writes in, hey, guys, it was Claude Noel in Winnipeg, although I'm not sure if he was rolling his eyes or just looking up to watch the other team's goal replayed on the Jumbotron.
Oof.
Hope Maurice Stein's here. Signed, Eric. Peter P. writes in, Todd McClellan and the rest of the staff of the San Jose Sharks every single spring. Michael A. writes, or Mike in Buffalo writes in, Carlisle would roll his eyes if they'd not been seared by watching Gardner and Fronten getting burned so much. It's from Mike in Buffalo, partisan there.
Randy M's got a good one here. Question of the day. 1, Edmonton. 2, Toronto. 3, Washington. And then submits, teams where players roll eyes at coach. 1, Edmonton. 2, Toronto. 3, Washington. That's good.
Matt K, Devils for their ability to dangle goalies and inability to put the puck over the pad in the shootout. This is from Deanne. There's plenty of this is about the Pacific rivalry thing that was on the blog today. Sorry, that was QOD. Dave writes in, Devils coaches when the buzzer after OT sounds, it's all lack of confidence from there. And he tweets us a picture of Peter DeBoer rolling his eyes while the ample chest of Taylor Stevens is behind him.
Oh my.
Chris Kraft, probably TSN because they are going about to go on a 12-year playoff drought. Oh,
ouch.
You're listening to the American vs. Wyshynski podcast brought to you by Sportsnet and Yahoo Sports.
Yeah.
Mike DeKalb writes in, Edmonton, so much skill, such poor execution, must drive coaches crazy.
That's Edmonton.
There's a few more here, but we've covered most of these selections.
Hey,
I think one thing I did want to mention today,
and this really bears repeating, although many have made this point before, and it's a really good one. Congratulations to Union over the weekend. Congratulations to a school that does not give out athletic scholarships that beat the Gophers for the national and NCAA championship over the weekend. And it's interesting because watching the game, I said to myself, okay, if a team like Union, which I know very little about outside of Shane Gostisbehere, whom I love, Philly, you got a good one coming. I would have thought that if you're going to beat a team like the Gophers, it's got to be a 2-1 game. You really got to play, you know, sound defense. You can't open it up because the Gophers are going to kill you. You know, a team like Union, and I don't know a ton about NCAA hockey, but watching that game, I thought to myself, these guys are going for it. Like, it wasn't a 2-1 game. It's a 7-4 game. Like, they played hockey, and that was an awesome game to watch. Congratulations to Union over the weekend. Your NCAA Division I champions without Greg Wyshynski, athletic scholarships.
And also without Greg Wyshynski.
Without Greg Wyshynski. Did you watch it at all? It's a good game. It was fun.
I saw a little bit of it, yeah. A little bit here and there. It was not, I wasn't that riveted. Once we got past the semis, I wasn't as riveted with the
You want to be seeing
the final.
You want to Boz, you want to see Johnny Gaudreau in there and Bill Arnold.
Johnny Hockey? Evidently Johnny Hockey, yeah, which I'm kind of pissed off about.
Whatever, man. We got Connor McHockey coming next year.
That's true. We do. Connor McHockey.
Speaking of which,
Johnny Hockey.
Again,
yes.
the decision is coming. The decision for Garth Snow is coming. Do you keep the pick this year and maybe hand Connor McHockey to the Buffalo Sabres, or you surrender the pick this year, have a shot at getting Connor McHockey, Noah Hanifin, Jack Eichel, one of these players, and at the same time, say to your marketplace, we might be worse next year. Because isn't that the message? if you hang on to the pick for next year, like if you're the New York Islanders, isn't that the message if you hang on to the pick this year? It's protection in case you're even worse. Like, how do you go back to the marketplace and say, guys, re-up your season tickets, come see the New York Islanders. We think we might be worse next year because we're hanging on to the pick. Like, we may have this real, on really, I mean, how many times do you get 100% unfiltered honesty from a general manager's decision? We're about to get it from Gar Snow. Where do you think?
Well, I'll say this about that decision, though. You can couch it by saying we want to make sure that we have this pick available to us in case we need to move it for an asset in our pursuit of the Stanley Cup next year.
That's not bad. Spinning like a top. Okay, that's good.
You know, I did get my start in PR. I don't know if you know.
No, that's pretty good. You shine that apple up real nice, Greg. You're like, nice shine
I
on
did,
that
indeed.
One.
I did. Indeed.
That's good. Look how shiny those
all
rims
right,
are. Man, you polished that car nice.
No, oh, thank you. Very good. Oh, that's quite a trailer hit.
Now.
The where's the chrome, though? All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us here on the Merrick Brzezinski podcast for a Monday. I am Greg Brzezinski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. Quick plug. Tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet, our playoff preview, two-hour extravaganza. I'll return for, I think I'm doing three segments tonight in the strategy room, so that's on the... on the agenda tonight, G. Wyszynski.
Who's in the strategy room?
In the strategy room tonight, we have Brian Lawton. We have Denny Potfan. We have Mayday. And I want to say Marty, I think, McSorley. We have one other. But Mayday, Denny Potfan, and Brian Lawton for sure.
Puck Daddy previews begin tonight with the Ducks and the Stars. I will not reveal the special gimmicky genre of these previews, except to say that it has to do with finding romance. So Tuesday, so previews today, Tuesday, Wednesday, official playoff picks Wednesday, awards tomorrow, and we are going to be doing a playoff preview chat. I know many of you who read Puck Daddy lament the loss of the rumors chats. It was just too much. It was very hard to do the podcast and the rumors chat and interviews and all that bullshit in the day. So we just got real lazy about it. But special playoff chat, first round chat. You can come and talk to me and Harrison and Leahy and everybody on Wednesday before the show. I'm going to guess it's going to be around 1 o'clock and then right into the podcast after that. So there's that. So lots to do along with all of the coaches who will be fired within the next 24 hours.
Exciting.
Well. Very exciting. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks to Josh Cooper, and thanks to Bernie Federico for joining us, and we shall talk to you soon. Bye.